MechCast, Sunday, April 11th, 2021. Hey, MechGeeks, it's time for your MechCast, the show for MechGeeks by MechGeeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MechCast. Hope you are having a great week. Don't know what you might be up to, but hopefully whatever it is fun. Things have been going okay here around MechCast headquarters. Just relaxing, enjoying some time with the family, playing some games, all that sort of stuff. So hopefully you're doing similar sorts of things. Glad to be back here with you for another episode of the MechCast. Boy, do we have a lot of good stuff to get into in this episode. Just going through the show notes, I'm looking at things. We've got WWDC information to give you. We're going to talk about some new products that you can use with your iOS Find My. I'm trying not to give away things. Can you tell this? That the Find My app, we're going to talk about Apple's upcoming event, or maybe lack thereof one, and what's going on there. 120 hertz is in Apple's radar at this point in more ways than you might think. Also, Apple TV Plus going on. Lots of stuff happening there. Got IMAX. We've got games. Bunch of fun things. And then we're going to get into some of your feedback. Got a little bit of a mystery to help a listener with this week. Also, we're going to talk about what happens to all of your iTunes purchases when you shuffle off this mortal coil. Not to get too grim, we'll get into that. Questions about calendar and mail. I've got a question about universal remotes. Someone looking for some help from our community. And secret apps at Apple, and a couple of things of the moment, some stuff that I'm enjoying that I figured I would share with you. So it should be a great episode. But before we get into everything, I do want to take a quick moment and thank a show sponsor, and that is Cashfly. You know, Cashfly, we love them here at the MacCast because they are the folks that help deliver this podcast to you each and every week quickly and reliably, and I can't thank them enough for that. So I encourage you to go support Cashfly, and they can actually help you with your website, because when your website doesn't load, people are going to lose interest. As a matter of fact, for every second it takes your website to load, it can cost your company about 16% in engagement. And less engagement means fewer visitors and fewer customers, and that's really not good for anyone. But the good news is the folks at Cashfly, they've got your back with their new web optimization capabilities. All of your content can be optimized before it's delivered to your visitors without requiring any development effort from you. And with the recent addition of Cashfly's flexible edge application platform and implementation services, their capabilities reach far beyond those of any traditional CDN. Cashfly's web content optimization solution includes powerful APIs for solving content distribution problems, on-the-fly next-generation image optimization, application load balancing, and smart asset delivery. Listen, if your website is directly tied to your revenue, and you know it is, optimize your site's content now. Guarantee the best user experience for all of your customers, no matter where they are or what platform or device they're using. And the good people at Cashfly are even going to provide a free optimization consultation for listeners of this podcast. That's right. Just for you, you can know exactly where your site stands today with a Lighthouse score report and learn how Cashfly's web optimization solution can help add 60 points instantly to your score. Just visit mac.cashfly.com. That's mac.cashefly.com for that free web optimization consultation. And a big thank you to Cashfly for their support of the MacCast. Apple has officially announced their Worldwide Developer Conference for 2021, WWDC 2021. And as you may have imagined, it is going to once again be virtual this year. They are running it under the tagline, "A Glow to Behold," and the invites that went out, or the marketing, I guess, that went out, is using Memoji branding to give a little homage, I think, to Air Force One in the video of the debut of Apple Silicon in the M1, you know, the one where he's opening up the laptop and the glow is awash over his face. So they have different emoji for different potential conference attendees, I would assume, in that little ad campaign that they're running. And it's pretty cool. The conference is going to be running from June 7th to June 11th. And one of the nice things about it being virtual is it's free and open to all members of Apple's developer program. So they don't have to like restrict or limit the tickets like they do when they have it in person. So it went off really, really well last year. As a matter of fact, last year's conference had over 72 hours of video content, and Apple says they served 22 million viewers. They also held 4,500 one-on-one labs, and they're going to be doing all that stuff again, taking it to the next level, making it even bigger, doing even more. The focus of Worldwide Developer Conference, of course, tends to be all about the software, all about the developers, and what's coming next. So as far as what you and I might expect to get a glimpse at, that would be the operating systems, the next generation of operating systems, including Mac OS 12, iOS 15, iPad OS 15, TV OS 15, and Watch OS 8. Of course, we get, you know, little leaks of details, but we'll be able to actually get our first kind of glimpses at it. And there will likely be a focus on helping developers, I would imagine, make the transition to Apple Silicon. That's going to be a big thing for Apple this year. So getting apps migrated over, probably a big focus for Apple and a big focus for the developers attending the conference this year. There's always a slim chance, a slight chance that there might be some timed hardware announcements as well. We'll probably hear some things as we get closer to June, but right now, not hearing anything about any kind of hardware announcements being tied to Worldwide Developer Conference just yet. I also think it'll be very interesting to see if Apple opens up any about the rumored upcoming AR or VR headsets. At the very least, you can expect from a software perspective that there's probably going to be some focus on that if they actually don't show maybe a sneak peek of hardware or what they're intending to do. You know, Apple doesn't often tip their hand as to what they're doing on the hardware side, but we've seen them do it on occasion, right? Occasionally they kind of pre-announce stuff. They help developers get ready for new platforms and new services. So there might be some hints in there. So we're going to have to keep an eye on Worldwide Developer Conference this year and see what we might be able to glean out of it. But officially, it's happening June 7th through June 11th online. And of course, if you want to participate, just sign up for the Apple Developer Program and sign up to be an attendee at the conference. I really think you just download the app and then I think you can access all of the sessions and those sorts of things. Of course, there's likely to be a keynote, and of course, we'll cover that here on the MacCast when it happens. Apple may not yet have their own rumored AirTag Bluetooth trackers out. We keep hearing that they're right around the corner, but this past week they did officially announce their third-party Find My Network accessory program. So this was another rumor. We had kind of seen hints of this in the software in some of the betas. We were expecting them to open up tags to third-party developers, and they've done exactly that. The new program is going to allow third-party Bluetooth devices to be tracked within the Find My app. For the announcement, Apple officially announced three different companies with kind of different products being supported by the Find My app. The first was Belkin. They have a set of wireless earbuds that integrate directly with the Find My app. There's a company called Chipolo, I think. They actually have item trackers. So if you don't want to wait for Apple's AirTags, they are going to have item trackers. They're not quite out yet. They have a current version, but there is a new version of their One tags that are going to work with the Find My app. So you can sign up to be on the waiting list for those right now. And then there was a company I had not heard of before, Van Moof. And they sell ultra high-end e-bikes, so like $3,000 e-bikes. Those are going to work with the Find My app as well. And all of those devices are going to be becoming available over the next week or so, apparently. There are specific rules and guidelines, of course, for vendors who want to participate in the Find My Network program. And that includes adhering to some of Apple's strict privacy guidelines, which is pretty nice. So it'll be interesting to see how many companies choose to participate. I'm sure there's additional licensing and other things that you need to do to participate. But we've got three companies so far. Hopefully it'll open up to more and more. And in case you're wondering, Apple will be opening up access to their U1 specification to device makers, although it's not available right now. Apple says it's going to be coming later this spring. That will allow accessories that support ultra-wideband, rather, to create a directionally aware experience for their trackers. So when you're nearby, you'll be able to track them much more precisely using the ultra-wideband technology. Now, of course, ultra-wideband tags are going to require an Apple device that has Apple's U1 chip, like the iPhone 11 or the iPhone 12. Third-party support in the Find My app was actually added on the software side in iOS 14.3, iPad OS 14.3, and Mac OS Big Sur 11.1, so all the infrastructure is in place to support the new tags once they do become available. Like I said, it's going to be happening over the next couple weeks, and I would imagine we can expect more third-party companies to be announced in the future. But that's what it's looking like for now. Very, very interesting that Apple has a tag tracker company, and they haven't gotten their own tags to market. So they might have just sort of sniped themselves, I think, by announcing this. But it'll be interesting to see if Apple finally does come out with their air tags, how they choose to maybe differentiate themselves from a product like the Chipolo tags. And if you've ever used those tags, I'd love to hear a little bit more about them. This is the first time I've heard of them, but I guess they've been out there for a while. Competitor to Tile. Tile seems to be the company that always comes up when you start talking about Bluetooth trackers. But if anybody in our community has used these other tags or is familiar with them and wants to give us a little review, I'd love to hear more about them. So shoot me an email, send me an audio comment, maccast@gmail.com. And speaking of that Apple event where we may have heard about the AirTags already, or maybe the iPad Pros that are rumored to be coming, or maybe the new updates to the MacBook Pro. Yeah, obviously, as we sit here talking now, that hasn't happened. And so far, it's not been clear as to why, because we heard reports that Apple was not really impacted by the global chip shortage that has been going on. And if you were paying attention, though, those reports were commenting about the effects really on the upcoming iPhone, the iPhone 13. And while it still seems to be the case that the iPhone 13 is likely not impacted, we are now hearing from sources like Nikkei Asia that the Apple supply chain for some of their other products is being impacted, products like the iPads and the MacBook Pros. So chips needed for displays and display components seem to be impacting the iPads, and chips for final board assembly are reportedly impacting MacBook Pro production, at least according to reports, and that likely could be why we haven't got an Apple announcement yet. We've been expecting Apple would hold an event to announce iPads and Apple Silicon MacBook Pros, but it's looking like we, you know, might understand why invites have not gone out at this point. Bloomberg is reporting, though, that they are still expecting an Apple event this month. With those noted updates to the iPad Pro, they note that the 12.9-inch iPad Pro model with the mini LED display is still expected to happen, although it may be severely supply constrained due to low mini LED display yields. So Apple seeming to be having some issues with that component could be another reason why they've delayed the announcement of the new products. And, of course, while iPhone production does not seem to be impacted at the moment, that always could change. And a report noted, at the very least, that iPhone component supplies are very, very tight at this point. So, you know, globally, we're having a chip shortage and a component shortage, and ultimately that is going to lead back and affect Apple. So hopefully that gets cleared up sometime soon, but you can expect this year with Apple's product announcements that supplies are going to be probably constrained, which it's an interesting dilemma to be in because, of course, it means that it's going to drive demand a bit more. For us Apple fans, it may mean we have to wait a little bit longer for our products, so get ready to have a little bit more patience this year when Apple makes their announcement and have a little bit harder time maybe getting your hands on your favorite Apple gear. But it'll all eventually be available. Right at the end of the day, we're talking about consumer electronics. It's not a whole bunch to worry about, but it is going on and just something to be aware of as we move into kind of Apple season. It's just the big question now being is, what are we going to be able to get a look at? And we're going to just have to wait. But maybe April will reveal the next round of Apple products. Apple always has been pretty good, though, at planning ahead for production. And they do try to make huge orders, and that helps them. It's one reason why the iPhone is likely at lower supply risk. And by the same token, we've heard that Apple is already maybe getting ready for 2022 in the next round of A-series processors and M1 processors and Apple Silicon, because they reportedly have booked production capacity for 4-nanometer chip production with their partner, Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Corporation. Currently, the Apple A-series and M1 series chips use TSMC's 5-nanometer process, and there's no word on when we'll actually see Apple products with the new 4-nanometer chips, but TSMC themselves is expected to have volume production ready for the new process by the fourth quarter of this year, fourth quarter of 2021, and that's actually ahead of schedule. They had originally planned to have that capability online sometime in 2022. So we may see 4-nanometer chips from Apple sooner than we might expect, which could be great for the future of Apple Silicon and maybe some of those new Pro machines. So looking into next year, things are likely only going to get better and better for Apple Silicon and Apple processors, things getting faster as they move to a new 4-nanometer process. So pretty exciting times. We're going to have to wait and see what Apple delivers for us. Looking at 2021 in the rumor mill, it seems to be all about 120 hertz. I'm talking about 120 hertz refresh rates. We continue to hear that this year Apple will be delivering iPhones with ProMotion displays. When we talk refresh rates and Apple products, you usually think about the iPad or the iPhone, but there are now hints that Apple may be looking to go all ProMotion on their Apple TV, their next generation Apple TV. This is according to 9to5Mac. They found references to 120 hertz support in the beta of tvOS 14.5. Of course, that would mean that it would require some new hardware and as yet unreleased Apple TV, but we have been hearing rumors that Apple is working on something new in the Apple TV department, and you'd obviously need a television set that could support the 120 hertz refresh rate. It also means that it's not going to be something that will be upgradable in the current 4K Apple TV for a few reasons, including the fact that it will also require an updated HDMI port. The HDMI port in the Apple TV 4K is a 2.0 port, and to be able to support a 120 hertz refresh rate, you're going to need HDMI 2.1. So we would expect new hardware to come along with that, and the hint of 120 hertz support on a Apple TV in tvOS 14.5 could be an indication, again, that new hardware is on the works, or in the works, rather, and may be on the way. For this year, 2021, we continue to hear that Apple may be all about 120 hertz and 120 hertz refresh rates. And when we talk refresh rates for Apple products, you likely think of their iPads, which already have 120 hertz ProMotion displays, or now maybe even the iPhone. But there are hints this week that Apple may be looking to go all ProMotion on another product, and it might be a surprising one. It's the Apple TV. 9to5Mac found references to 120 hertz support in the tvOS 14.5 beta. So what does that exactly mean? Well, it means that we would need some new hardware, not only in the form of new televisions potentially, if you don't have a set that supports 120 hertz, but it would also mean that we do need a new Apple TV, because the current Apple TV 4K only has an HDMI 2.0 port, and to be able to support 120 hertz, you need HDMI 2.1. So the fact that we have a software reference in the tvOS beta to a piece of hardware that doesn't exist bodes well for the rumors we've been hearing that Apple is getting set to release a new Apple TV. It also kind of bolsters up the rumor that Apple TV might have a little bit more of a gaming focus, and Apple may be looking to step up Apple Arcade a little bit, because a higher refresh rate is going to be a lot better for gaming. So maybe all the stars are aligning for a new Apple TV release coming out fairly soon. And again, 120 hertz refresh rate could be pretty nice, again, if you have the hardware to support it. I have to check my TV. I don't think I have a modern enough TV to support it. And the idea of, buying another set, that's a little bit expensive. But for those folks who are into that sort of stuff, 120 hertz may be on the way. As you know, it has been predicted for the iPhone for a few years now that, finally the iPhone Pro will get a 120 hertz ProMotion display. Well, this week, DigiTimes continues to parrot those reports, saying that this year's iPhone Pro models will be equipped with new low-power LTPO displays, allowing for those 120 hertz refresh rates. If you take that iPhone with a new screen and add to that the rumors of improved cameras, possibly under-display Touch ID technology, updated processors, and a whole bunch more, 2021 could be a great year for iPhone. As a matter of fact, there's some folks who think that it may be Apple's best iPhone year yet. They started the year strong. Counterpoint Research has a report saying that iPhone models were accounting for 6 out of the top 10 best-selling. They smell good too. Best-selling iPhones globally in January. As a matter of fact, Apple's iPhone 12 topped the list, followed by the iPhone 12 Pro Max and the iPhone 12 Pro. And believe it or not, the iPhone 12 Mini even made it on that top 10 list as well. So, beginning of the year looking great for iPhone 12. Back after the year looking great in the potential for the iPhone 13. Wedbush analyst Dan Ives expects this year's iPhone to bring even bigger numbers for Apple than they have ever seen. He claims that Apple could even beat their record year for iPhone sales, which was 2015, where they shipped 231 million iPhones. Ives thinks this year for Apple could see 240 to 250 million iPhones, with a lot of potential upgraders out there in the market. As a matter of fact, he estimates that about 350 million folks are potentially looking to upgrade their iPhones this year and eyeing what Cupertino is doing with the iPhone 13. Of course, 5G is also coming into play, I would imagine. And a lot of people just haven't upgraded yet. So this could be a banner year for iPhone sales. And a big portion of those sales, they might be coming from U.S. teens, because apparently the iPhone, hugely, hugely popular with U.S. teens, at least according to new data from a survey of 7,000 U.S. teens done by Piper Sandler. Their report shows that 88% of U.S. teens actually already own an iPhone, and that 90% expect an iPhone to be their next phone purchase. In addition, some other interesting numbers from that same report, 70% of U.S. teens already own AirPods, so AirPods hugely popular in the teen sector. That's not too surprising. And another one that bodes well for Apple is that U.S. teens also seem to be increasingly using Apple Pay. So that trend of kind of getting the next generation of buyers using Apple Pay, that's working for Apple apparently. Cash still is the favorite method of buying things among U.S. teens, but again, Apple Pay coming in a close second. So that's what's happening with iPhone this year, and it's looking to be really, really good for Apple. Apple TV Plus wants to be in the movies, at least according to a report from The Information. Apple seems to be thinking that the future of their Apple TV Plus service could be tied to films, and Apple using that as a way to attract subscribers to their Apple TV Plus service. They are apparently telling studio executives in Hollywood that they'd like to create between 10 to 12 movies per year for their Apple TV Plus service. There's already been data that show that films like Palmer and Cherry and Groundhog and even The Banker tend to deliver significant spikes in viewership for Apple's service, so it seems like they are really planning to try and leverage that. And to help those efforts, they've recently hired a former vice president of feature films from HBO Max, Jesse Henderson, to join their team and kind of fill out their film efforts. And you may remember, too, that Apple already has significant deals in place with a number of studios, including Imagine Entertainment and Skydance Animation. So expect a lot more films coming to the Apple TV Plus service in the near future. And it's looking like if you happen to star in an Apple TV Plus movie, you have a pretty good chance of maybe getting a deal on a TV series as well. There were announcements this week for new Apple TV Plus series starring Justin Timberlake, who was in the Apple film Palmer, and Tom Holland, who recently starred in the Apple film Cherry. Starting with Timberlake, he's going to be starring in a series based on the memoir of the Gong Show host Chuck Barris, the book Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, which was written in 1984. There actually already is a great film with the same title that was done by George Clooney, and it stars Sam Rockwell. It's a really, really fun film. But basically, if you don't know about this book, Chuck Barris, host of The Gong Show, yes, that 70s TV show, TV game show, claims in his book, his memoir, that The Gong Show was really just a cover for his role as a CIA operative. You really can't make this stuff up. And so that's going to be what the new Justin Timberlake TV series for Apple TV Plus is based on. So it could be very, very fun and very, very interesting. If it's anything like the film, I think it's going to be great. And then Tom Holland, he's going to star in a new anthology series called The Crowded Room. This is a series that will follow Billy Milligan, who was the first person ever acquitted of a crime due to multiple personality disorder. It's going to be a 10-episode series and will be a co-production between Apple Studios and New Regency. Apple also this week added a few more details about the new show that they're putting together that's going to bring Jon Stewart out of retirement, including revealing the title, which we hadn't heard before. It's going to be called Problems with Jon Stewart, and it's set to debut on Apple TV Plus this fall. It's going to be a one-hour current affair series with each episode focusing on a current topic. And then Apple has been expanding a couple of their entertainment services internationally, or at least looking to do so. Apple TV Plus may finally be making its way to South Korea. They're reportedly looking for a partner in SK Telecom, and if everything works out, they are trying to launch the service sometime later this year in South Korea. And then this week, Apple Music TV, their kind of MTV-type service under Apple Music and Apple TV, was expanded to the United Kingdom and Canada. So that's been just available in the U.S. So far, but now U.K. and Canada can take advantage of Apple Music TV. It's basically just like classic MTV, playing videos around the clock and occasionally throwing in a live music event. If you want to check it out, you should be able to find it on the TV app or inside the music app. Are we ready for big screen IMAX? It's looking like we may get a larger iMac this year when Apple finally ships their Apple Silicon iMac. And I'm not talking about the larger 24-inch iMac on the bottom end. I'm talking about something bigger on the top end, at least if you choose to believe a tweet by Apple leaker Love to Dream. This leaker's been accurate in the past, so there's no reason not to believe him. But the tweet did simply say the IMAX screen is really big, bigger than the biggest one. And that was it. But it led to a flurry of speculation in the community that that means we're getting larger screen IMAX this year. That would be a new addition to some of the other rumors we've already heard. We've been talking about a possible redesign with comments that a new chinless iMac would be coming with a look inspired by Apple's Pro Display XDR. That makes me wonder, you know, could the iMac, the larger iMac, then be the same 32-inch size? Could it basically look like a Pro Display XDR, but as an iMac? And when you think about that, that does seem to align. It does seem very plausible. And as I noted, we previously heard that Apple would be replacing the 21.5-inch model with a new 24-inch model. So looking like this year, bigger iMacs all around. And I think that's pretty exciting. It's probably time. And I've often thought about making the migration away from a notebook as I use my iPad Pro more and more for my portable computing needs, and my MacBook Pro kind of less and less. I tend to use it more around the house and sitting at my desk. And so it might be really, really nice to have a big, gorgeous 32-inch Apple display attached to an amazing Apple Silicon iMac, right? Like, that sounds like the perfect computer. And, you know, if everything we're hearing about the number of cores and things that Apple is planning to put into their desktop processors for Apple Silicon, that just gets me super, super excited. So I'm hoping this rumor turns out to be true, because I think a 32-inch iMac that looks like a Pro Display XDR would be very, very sexy indeed and very, very appealing. But what do you think? And rounding out the news for today, let's go out on a little bit of a fun note and talk about Apple Arcade, because they got a lot more game this week. They announced 30 new titles. Well, not all of them technically new, but a lot of them new, and a lot of the titles that you've grown to love over the years with the App Store. They have classic titles coming in, and they also have some full new titles. And of course, what's great about Apple Arcade is both the new titles and the classic titles, they are fully unlocked, no in-app purchases. You don't have to deal with micropayments and all the weird gems and all that sort of stuff. You just get really great games that you can download and play for $5 a month, basically. And they added two whole new categories to the catalog, Timeless Classics and App Store Greats. And some of the new titles include things like NBA 2K21 Arcade Edition, which looks really, really nice. There's a new Star Trek game called Star Trek Legends. And they added something I had been waiting for this week, Wonder Box. They also threw in a bunch of legacy titles. They're saying some of them are actually remastered. So they've got titles like Monument Valley and Fruit Ninja, along with the Oregon Trail. So if you have a little bit of nostalgia, you can check that out. Although I think it's been modernized and updated for the current times. And overall, they have about 180 titles now on Apple Arcade. So they started out with about 100. They're almost to 200 titles now. And honestly, at $5 a month US, I think that's not a bad deal. I've been an Apple Arcade subscriber since the very beginning, and I'm constantly finding new things to play on there. It's well worth it when I look back at, you know, how much money I was spending just on one-off games on the store. And I don't do that as much anymore. I just dip right into my Apple Arcade account, and there's always something great to play. So I am definitely really, really enjoying that. But with that, that is going to do it for the news for this week. Before we move on, I do want to take a quick moment and thank another show sponsor, and that is Helix Sleep. Let me tell you a story about when I was younger and guilty of not upgrading my mattress. Yeah, I had one of those old, busted, broken mattresses that, you know, it had an atom-sized divot, let's say, in it. And I was just not wanting or not apt to really get a new mattress because honestly, the experience of buying a mattress for me is horrible. I didn't want to deal with it. I didn't want to deal with the store. I didn't want to go out there have to do it. Well, Helix Sleep, they have the solution for you because they make it easy to really, really get a great mattress. And just not just any mattress, because the other problem is you don't want to just settle for a generic mattress. You want to get one that is customized for you. And buying a mattress from Helix is an amazing process. They make it super easy to get exactly the right mattress for your body because they have a simple 2-minute quiz that you take. You can go right now, go to helixsleep.com/mattcast, and you'll take the quiz. It'll walk you through a set of basic questions, and they can match your body type and your sleep preferences to the perfect mattress. And it even works for couples. They have a bunch of different mattress types, everything from soft to firm, great mattresses for cooling you down if you sleep hot. They have plus size mattresses for plus size folks. It really is a customized mattress. And for me, I took the quiz. I tend to sleep on my side. I like a firmer feel to my mattress. I took the quiz. It recommended the Twilight model for me, and it has been great. And best of all, you get quick delivery, great unboxing experience. You don't have to deal with a retail store. It comes right to you. And so if you're looking for a great mattress, just go to helixsleep.com/mattcast, take the quiz, order the mattress that is matched to you, and it'll come right to your door, shipped for free. Never need to go to a mattress store again. Helix is awesome, but you don't even need to take my word for it because Helix was awarded number one best overall mattress pick of 2020 by GQ and Wired Magazine. And they have a 10-year warranty, and you get to try it out for 100 nights risk-free. They'll even pick it up if you don't love it, but I know you will. Helix is even offering up to $200 off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for MattCast listeners at helixsleep.com/MattCast. That's helixsleep.com/MattCast, helixsleep.MattCast. And a huge thank you to Helix Sleep for their support of the MattCast. Okay, scammers and crooks, man. Scammers and crooks, they unfortunately are out there, and they are constantly, I think, trying to get us. I don't want to get paranoid or make anybody paranoid, but, you know, it happens. We get the scam calls. We get, just things bombarded at us online, emails, right? Well, this week, Eric sent me a little bit of a mystery that he's hoping we can help him solve. And it is quite a mystery because, well, actually, it's probably easier if I just let him tell you about it.
Hey, Adam, this is Eric from Silicon Valley. I had an odd thing happen the other day that I can't figure out and wondered if you had any input. It started with an email notification from Apple saying my new iPhone 12 was ready for pickup at my local store. I hadn't ordered an iPhone. I immediately called Apple to report it as fraudulent. They easily canceled the order and sent the order to their fraud department. Apple confirmed that the order seemed to have been placed in a normal fashion by somebody using my Apple ID. I also called the credit card and linked to my Apple ID. The money was refunded, and I have a new credit card. In retrospect, I think I probably didn't need to cancel the credit card since the order did seem to originate with my Apple ID. Here's the puzzle. How was this order made? I have 2-factor authentication turned on for my Apple ID account, and I didn't get any authentication requests over the last several days. I hadn't been looking at iPhones and making a test order that might have somehow gotten placed. I don't recall ever sharing my Apple ID and password with anybody. I'm really not sure how this happened. Do you have any ideas? I have since changed my Apple ID password and my Mac's password. Anything else I should do? As always, thanks for the great show.
Hey, Eric, I think actually canceling your credit card and having that redone and changing your passwords and those sorts of things, I think you should be fine having done all that in terms of securing your account. But as you noted, it's pretty odd Like, how did they get in there if you have two-factor authentication on? And that's where I'm getting a little bit stumped on this, and I'm hoping maybe the community could help us out with this, because I did a little bit of Googling, and I did find some reports of others actually having a similar experience. So it does feel like there's some sort of scam or something being done here, but it remains a little bit of a mystery to me, really, because of the whole password thing. Like, getting your password, I would imagine, I'm assuming, it sounds like you're a pretty smart guy, and I'm assuming you don't do this where you use, you know, reuse the same password on other services. Of course, you know, big, large data breaches expose people's passwords, and they'll just go through and use that password to try and get into other accounts, like your Apple account. It's, you know, fairly easy to figure out what maybe someone's associated Apple ID might be, so-and-so at iCloud.com. So if you use, you know, foo at Google.com and your Google password gets exposed, they're going to try foo at iCloud.com or foo at Mac.com with the same password. And if you've reused that password, of course, they're going to be able to get in. Now, I doubt that's what happened in your case, but maybe they were able to get into your account. But that, again, doesn't explain how they would have gotten past the two-factor authentication. So the next place my mind goes to is, and I've never really tried this, it may be worth doing some experimenting, but you know, you can use, I think, Apple Chat and also the phone to make orders for the Apple Store. You can probably get an Apple rep, I would imagine, to place an order for you. And I'm wondering if they have that capability to go in through your account. So I'm wondering if maybe what was going on here is they just try to place an order online through your account, hoping you don't notice the order emails and things going through, and then, you know, just wait a sufficient period of time. I guess since they're not going to get the notification email or the phone call on when it arrives at the store for in-store pickup, maybe they just keep checking every day and hope that they can, like, walk in and intercept the package before you get there. But even there, I would imagine you have to show some form of identification, I guess, identity theft on top of it. So maybe they use fake IDs with your name on them. Again, I'm definitely not, as you can probably tell, a scammer or a hacker. I can't think like those people do. And it's not always clear to me how these things work. This is where we probably need the help of, you know, I've just found out there's, like, folks on YouTube who just spend their entire time working on thwarting and even getting back at scammers and folks like this. So maybe those people know. Like I said, I did a little bit of Googling, some minor research. I didn't come up with anything definitive, but you're right. Maybe the folks in this awesome community we have here at the MacCast can help us out. So if you happen to know, or maybe you've received a similar kind of thing, let us know about it. Shoot me an email, send me an audio comment, maccast@gmail.com, and maybe we can solve Eric's mystery for him. Received another interesting question this week from Richard via email, and it has to do with transferring the purchases you make with your Apple ID. He asks me, quote, "Do you know if there's a way to gift your digital content, i.e. music, movies, etc., basically the items that you've purchased from Apple upon your death? Can the content go to someone whom you specify?" And it's a great question. It feels like a logical question, right? Is there a way to will my digital content to a family member or to someone who I want to give it to should I no longer require it? And the short answer, unfortunately, Richard, is no. There's no way to transfer ownership of your purchases, specifically because they're tied to your Apple ID, but there's also kind of a legal reason for it. Now, one kind of exception is a family account. So if you have an Apple family account, everyone in the family has access to all of your purchases, but the purchases themselves are still tied to the single Apple ID. But that might be a way to kind of work around it. You'd still have to kind of maintain or have the main owner's account, the main person who's actually paying for the Apple family account, but everybody else could kind of access that. So that could be one way you could kind of handle it. But the reason that you really can't, the legal reason that I was referring to, where you can't kind of quote unquote will your digital content to someone else comes down to the terms of service. You know, the one that we all read in full, right? We read all the tiny details. Well, if you did read those details, it would state inside there somewhere that when you're making your purchases, you're actually not buying anything physical. You're not actually buying ownership of the content. What you're buying is a non-transferable license to view, use, listen, whatever it may be, to that content or interact with that app and those sorts of things. So you're not gaining ownership. You do not own this stuff. You're actually just licensing it. So that's where you're kind of stuck, and that's why you can't really transfer it or will it away. As far as I know, right? I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a legal person. Maybe there is a legal loophole around this, and maybe someone in the MacCast community will, you know, give us the key or the secret to be able to actually do this should we want to. The only other thing I could find in my research is a sort of workaround. You could just make sure that your family has access to your login credentials and your iCloud account. So you could pass that along, and that way they could get in and access that content. And a great way to do that, in my opinion, is to sign up for a 1Password family account. I actually have this with my family. So you can define passwords that you share. You can have in a shared library. You can define personal ones. Each person can kind of have their own, and it makes it easy to move those things back and forth. And so with their login, they can simply log into, you know, you could simply then log into their Apple ID and get access to that content. A little bit inconvenient because you're going to have to be constantly logging in and logging out, and there still is no way to transfer that content between accounts, but at least you would have access to that. Now, by the same token of me not being a lawyer that I mentioned earlier, I would imagine this could also potentially violate the terms of service since you're still accessing content that was not originally licensed to you. So there may be some issues there as well. But those are all the things that I can think of. But certainly a great question, and something that, like, in the digital age, as we move more and more into the digital age, it seems like we may need to adapt our existing laws and sort of policies around this stuff. You know, another dilemma with Apple and iTunes and purchases is, like, with a family account, and I get this question a lot too, is there's not really an easy way for a child who has been a participant in the family account to kind of separate and maybe take some of the content with them, right? So I have certain things that are actually in my account that I purchased on behalf of or for my kids, be it various apps or maybe even movies that they enjoy. And so they're technically tied to my account, but they were really kind of for them. And it would be great to be able to give those to them as they move on and become adults and take their own Apple accounts with them. And it's just something that Apple really hasn't addressed. It comes up, you know, from time to time. Another big one related to this is folks who have multiple Apple IDs and maybe have content that was purchased on different Apple IDs and want to go the other route. They want to be actually able to merge them, not necessarily separate them or transfer them. So very, very interesting question. And thank you for sending in your email this week. Now we have Brett. He sent me an audio comment because he's run across a little bit of a bug with search in Apple's calendar app, and he's looking for a little bit of help and some potential recommendations. So let's see if we can help Brett out. Here's what he had to say.
Hi, Adam. Brett from Coachella Valley here. Hey, great to hear your show. As always, I send little thoughts to you when I'm stuck on something and can't find a good solution. Lo and behold, I've got another one of those today. So I notice as I get older, I have a lot more trouble remembering what I've done in the past and when I've done it. When I search the calendar appointments on iOS or iPadOS, it's only showing me about a year back, maybe a little bit more. But I need to be able to search things further than a year back. And I can't do that with Apple's built-in programs. I can do it on the Macintosh, but I can't do it on iOS or iPadOS. It just doesn't work. It doesn't go back that far. The data is there, but the search function won't find it if it's older than a year or a little more than a year. So that's interesting. I think some of the others are like that as well, including Google Calendar, unless you go through the web. iCloud will also not search. I thought it used to, but when I go to calendar on iCloud.com, you click on the little gearbox and you can go directly to a day, a specific day, but you can't search for content on your calendar via iCloud as well. So I'm looking for the perfect solution. I found a few third-party calendar programs that will do it, including Fantastical, but they all come at a cost. My question for you is there a free solution to be able to search further back than a year on your calendar using your iPhone or your iPad? Thank you. Have a great show.
Hey, Brett. Thank you for that question and for bringing this to my attention, because I had no idea that this was a problem, probably because I actually am a Fantastical user. But I did a little bit of digging when I received your email, or your voicemail rather, and it definitely is a problem. You are not alone in having this issue. As a matter of fact, it looks like this issue, if it's an issue, it remains to be seen whether Apple thinks this is a feature or not. You know, the only being able to search back a year. Many other folks seem to consider it a bug, but it's never been addressed. So it doesn't even matter how you have your calendar set. Now, you already noted that you can go back in your calendar further than a year. And one tip I want to point out to folks who maybe are looking at their calendar and going, hey, not only can I not search back more than a year, I can't go back in my calendar and browse further back than a year or further back than a few months. One setting you might want to check in settings calendar sync on your device is how much of your calendar data you're actually syncing. You want to be sure it's set to all events, or adjust it to whatever time frame you want, depending upon how much data you want to pull down to your device. But when you're syncing, you can limit how far back your calendar will go. But unfortunately, no matter what that setting is set at, it doesn't seem to make a difference with the searching, as Brett has pointed out. Like I said, I've been a satisfied Fantastical user for years. Part of the reason why I probably didn't know this problem exists, it is both on my Mac and on my iOS devices. I only use Fantastical. I've replaced Apple's calendar. I did have to pop it open to kind of play around with it based on your voicemail here and just to check things out. And sure enough, yeah, it doesn't search back. Fantastical does. Fantastical does offer a free basic version. I don't know if it would have all the features that you're looking for, Brett. So you don't have to buy a subscription, but I have to tell you, it is a subscription app. I think it's well worth it. At $5 a month, $60 a year to have a really, really great calendar, especially if you're like me and rely daily on your calendar, I think it's a great value. I have no problems paying it and supporting the developers. I think they do a fabulous job. Now, that said, that doesn't necessarily address or answer your problem. What I'm finding is we're not going to get it fixed in iCal. So you probably need to look for, or calendar, I guess it is. You probably need to look for an alternative solution. And if Fantastical isn't it, there are some other great apps out there. I was looking for some free ones. I didn't find a free one that I thought was particularly amazing, and I haven't had a chance to review a lot of them, so I'm going to maybe rely on the community a little bit. Those of you in the community, if you have a great free, and remember this is iOS and iPad that we're looking for, iOS calendar app that offers full searching and goes back more than a year, let us know about it. But for paid apps, you can look at something like BusyCal from BusyMac. I love BusyCal, both on the Mac and on iOS. It is a great calendar app. It's just $4, $4.99 US, about $5, I guess I should say, on the App Store, and it's a one-time purchase, so that's not too much. And I did buy it and download it and try it out. It definitely searches all the way back in your calendars, so you can give that one a try for not a lot of money. Readle, another one of my favorite Mac software makers, also makes a great app called Calendars 5. Now, it's a little bit more pricey. It's about $30 if you were to buy it. But again, another great calendar app with a lot of features, and that might be an alternative that you can look into. So those are my recommendations. Hopefully, those of you in the community, you might have some additional recommendations, or it'd be awesome if there's some sort of fix, something that either I'm missing or my Google Foo is failing me on, that allows you to use Apple's built-in calendar app and search further back than a year. What's interesting about the calendar question is I also get similar questions, or have received similar questions, about listeners having issues with search in Mail as well, macOS Mail, and their mailboxes, especially after upgrading to Big Sur. I've been getting a lot of people saying, hey, I upgraded to Big Sur and my mail's not working right. I've got weird folders showing up. I've got extra mailboxes showing up. Everything's a big, giant mess. The biggest issue and trouble I seem to be hearing about a lot is the universal inbox. So up at the top where you have, you know, all inboxes and all draft folders and all those sorts of things, I have had reports and seen screenshots of the all mailboxes getting messed up and showing duplicates and having multiple mailboxes on my Mac and all that sort of stuff. But also reports of indexing and searching not working. And so I don't know what's going on there. I didn't have any problems in my upgrade to macOS Big Sur with Mail. It seems to be working fine for me. But again, another thing on the mail side is I use Spark as my main mail client. That's a great mail app from the folks over at Readle. So I've moved to an alternative app, but the built-in mail app I think is pretty good. I've never had problems with it, but if you are having problems with it, there's a couple things you can do and check to maybe address searching issues or just general mailboxes being kind of messed up issues. The first thing to do would be, if you are seeing a bunch of duplicate mailboxes, especially if they're in that on my Mac section, you might want to check that the mailbox mappings for your accounts are set up correctly, especially if you're using IMAP accounts. So you can actually map your cloud accounts to the mail application. And the way you can check this is you go, you know, launch mail, go into the mail menu under preferences, and then click on the accounts tab. And then you're going to want to select the account that you want to check the mailbox mappings for and click on the mailbox behaviors tab. And then inside that tab, just make sure for the drafts, sent, junk, trash, and archive mailboxes that they're mapped or pointing to the correct place. If they're pointing to on my Mac and that's not what you intended them to be pointed to, you might want to change that, because if you're using IMAP, you most likely want these mailboxes pointed at the location of that that folder or that mailbox on your hosting provider's servers and not on my Mac. If it's pointed at on my Mac, basically your mail is going to download and it's going to be local copies stored right there on your Mac. And so that can be a little bit confusing, and you can wind up with maybe multiple of the same mailbox if that somehow got switched at some point. So that's one thing to look into. If you're just having general problems with searching or not finding things, or you're trying to open up mailboxes and messages are missing, or you're having trouble finding stuff, you might want to try either rebuilding or re-indexing your mailboxes. And I would recommend that you make sure that you have a full backup of your email before you try this. These techniques are generally pretty safe. I've never really had any trouble just using them. But, you know, backups are always a good thing just in case something goes south. But rebuilding your mailboxes, that's pretty easy. You just open up the Mail app, you select the mailbox that you want to rebuild, and then under the Mailboxes menu, you just simply choose Rebuild. And that's going to go through and reset up and kind of rebuild that mailbox. It'll probably pull down emails and things from your server and just get everything synced, kind of synced back up, right? So if it's kind of gotten out of sync or a little bit wonky, that's something you can do. Another kind of more extreme version of this is an option to actually re-index your mailboxes. And this is where you definitely probably want to have a backup, because what you need to do to manually re-index your mailbox is you're going to quit the mail application if it's running. Then you're going to open up your Finder and you're going to want to go to your library folder and your home folder. If you don't already know how to get to it, probably the easiest way to do it is to, in the Finder, go under the Go menu in the menu bar. And when you access the Go menu, hold down the Option key. That will allow you to see the library folder, and you can select the library folder. And then within the library folder, you're going to want to go to the mail folder, and then you're going to look for the current version, the folder for the current version of your mail application. You might see multiple folders in here. They usually start with the letter V, so like V5, V6, V7, V8, and these are the different versions of mail that have existed in Mac OS. And if you've been doing over-the-top upgrades, you'll probably see multiple versions of this folder. But the current version is V8. That's for Mac OS Big Sur. So find the current version, and then inside that folder, you'll find a folder that says mail data. And inside the mail data folder, you're going to want to locate and move all of the files that start with the word envelope index, such as envelope index, envelope index-wal, W-A-L. Find all of the ones that start with envelope index and just move those out onto your desktop temporarily. We're just going to keep them there just to make sure that everything works here on the re-indexing and you don't have any problems, because you can always just put them back, right? But they should get rebuilt as your index gets rebuilt. So just move them out to the desktop, put them there temporarily, and then once you've done that, go ahead and open back up Apple Mail. And what should happen is Apple should start rebuilding the envelope index files. This process can take a pretty long time, so be patient, let the rebuild process, you know, happen. And once it's done, hopefully everything in your mail app will be back to normal. If it is and you confirm that it's back to normal, then you can get rid of those envelope index files on your desktop and you should be good to go. So there's some things you can try for maybe cleaning up and fixing your mail. And if anybody has an answer to Brett's question about searching the calendar app, please let us know your recommendations. Shoot me an email, send me an audio comment, maccast@gmail.com. Something that happened this week is a very popular accessory, I guess, for your television and maybe your Apple TV is going to be discontinued. You may or may not have heard the news, but Logitech is discontinuing their line of Harmony universal remotes. And I know there are huge fans of these remotes out there. As a matter of fact, a number of people in the community have emailed me, including folks like Mark, who said, "I love and I use these remotes for my TVs and for my Apple TVs and other equipment. It's kind of heartbreaking that these are going away." Logitech did say they're going to continue to support existing customers, but they're not going to be making any new hardware. And so what Mark was asking is if we could, in the community, offer up some potential alternatives for universal remotes to the Harmony remote. And he specifically mentioned in his email the Sofa Baton U1. So I'll have a link to this in the show notes at maccast.com. I'm not familiar with this remote, but he's wondering, has anybody used this, and is it a good alternative to the Harmony line? Does it work well with your Mac? Does it work well with your Apple TVs? So if you happen to know, it'd be great if you could send in an email or an audio comment that I can pass along to Mark. I also, in my own research, found something called the Savant Pro Remote X2. This actually was, I found on Apple's HomeKit website, so it's more of like a full home automation remote. It looks like a pretty high-end Pro Extreme system. I think it costs about $400, $500, so it's kind of crazy. I know some of the Harmony remotes could get up there, but I don't think they were that expensive. But it does fully integrate with HomeKit, although it does look like to find one of these things, you have to go through like a home automation supplier. So high end, but that may be something worth looking into. Mark, it looks pretty cool. You know, it's got a screen and a bunch of features. And like I said, you could integrate it fully with HomeKit if you're doing home automation. So that may be an option. But I am curious, you know, what other models would we recommend for each other for Mark? Because I really don't know. This isn't a space that I plan. The funny thing is that, and I know people hate the Siri remote. People hate the Apple TV remote. That's my only remote. It's the one that I use for everything. It is my quote unquote, universal remote for my TV and for my Apple TV. I don't even know if I know where the remote that came with my Samsung TV is, because I use the HDMI consumer electronics control, the CEC control, with my Apple TV remote. So my Apple TV remote powers on and off my TV. It controls the volume of my Sonos system, and I don't have cable. I just access everything through Apple TV. So that totally works for me, but I guess I have a totally simple system. I don't have multiple components and multiple things that I need to control. And I kind of like it that way. But if you're looking for a big, fully functional, universal remote, and you have an alternative to the Logitech Harmony line, let us know about it. Maccast@gmail.com. Found a cool thing this week over on iMore that I wanted to share with you. Well, sort of. It turns out there's a secret app on your iPhone, one that is pre-installed by Apple, but you may or may not know it's there, and it's for scanning QR codes. Now, you may know that you can use the camera app. It has built-in ability to scan QR codes. You just open up the camera app, point it at a QR code, and boom, that QR code works. But did you know there's also a standalone app that's pre-installed for scanning QR codes? And it wouldn't be surprising if you didn't know it was there, because you don't necessarily see it by default. The way you can access it is to open up Spotlight and type code scanner, and it will pop up in the search results. This little gray icon, QR code icon of the app to scan QR codes. Now, some of you are probably already, and I know you're probably already yelling at your iPhone or whatever you're listening to this podcast on, and saying, you know, Adam, I've seen that app before. That app is actually in Control Center. It's just the little Control Center app that you can use for QR codes. So that you can actually see it from there, and you can trigger the app to launch from the Control Center. So if you don't already have it in Control Center and you do want to add it, just open up Settings on your iOS device, go into Control Center and scroll down under More Controls and click the little plus symbol next to Code Scanner, and then you can add it. So same app, it's just not, you know, right there on your home screen when you install iOS. So kudos to iMore and their community for revealing this trick. I thought it was pretty cool. Secret apps on your iPhone, it's a lot of fun. So check that out. Okay, last thing that I have for you today is a thing of the moment, and it kind of riffs off one of the news items that we had earlier, and that is all these new games and titles coming to Apple Arcade. I already mentioned that I had been waiting for this new Apple Arcade game called Wonderbox, the Adventure Maker, to come out. And I have to say, I have not been disappointed. This is a really, really fun game. It's kind of a mix of a 2D, 3D platformer. It kind of moves between 2D and 3D. It's got a little elements of Minecraft built into it. It ends up being a game builder and a level builder, and you can play either solo or you can play multiplayer. And really, in my opinion, the coolest part about this game is that as you play, you earn various components, different pieces of terrain, access to different characters and enemies, and power-ups and rewards and environments and those sorts of things. And then what you can do when you build up this library of components and pieces is they actually have a level builder and a level maker. So you can go in and build your own levels of the game. You can basically do, you know, quasi game development. And it's pretty cool all the different things that you can do with it. Like you can build just a straight up, you know, 2D, 3D platform side scroller kind of thing. You could build little puzzles. You can really, the sky's the limit. Just your imagination, you know, is what you need to use to build really cool levels and games. And not only that, once you've built them, you can share them out and make them available for anyone to play. So there's a huge library and growing library of all of these levels. People can vote on them and kind of comment on them, so you can see the ones that are really popular and play them. And I'm just having a lot of fun playing this game. So that's my first recommendation. If you have Apple Arcade, check out Wonderbox, the Adventure Maker. And then also, I ran across, just yesterday, I think it was, a fun game, fun party game that I played with my family, especially for anybody who likes music. And my oldest daughter really, really likes music. So I sent this to her and said, hey, we should play this. And we started playing with it. And it's a lot of fun. It's called Song Pop Party. And it's basically Name That Tune. They have a bunch of categories and playlists. You have to kind of level up and earn keys so that you can unlock them. But again, remember, this is Apple Arcade, so there's no in-app purchases. You can't pay cash for the keys. You actually have to play the game and level up and earn the keys, and then you can unlock characters, you can unlock additional playlists and genres and those sorts of things, and it has a nice range of genres and playlists. I think it's actually coming out of, I think the audio comments at content is actually coming out of Apple Music potentially. So it's really, really cool. And basically what happens is in each round, you can play multiple rounds. You pick a category, you pick a character, and then you will hear a song start to play. And then you're either going to guess through multiple choice style. You kind of get four options. You try to guess the song title or the artist, depending upon what they're asking you. And as the timer counts down, you start to get less and less points. So the faster you can answer the, you know, what the song is or who the artist is, you get more points. And you play through a number of rounds, and the person with the most points wins. I mean, it's a very simple game. Again, they have modes for playing solo. They have modes for playing arena, I think they call it, where it just randomly selects players online, so you can play online. Or you can play privately with up to 8 friends over the internet or just locally. And we just had a ton of fun playing it. I think we played for a couple hours just Sunday. I have to remember what day it is. And so it was a ton of fun. Really, really did enjoy it. And again, I am just overall enjoying the Apple Arcade service. I have since the beginning of the service. I know a lot of people don't think it's that great. And I'd love to hear from people who have just, you know, maybe tried it and not been impressed. And I don't know if it changes your mind now that they've expanded the catalog, they've got a lot more titles. I think they have a great range. Maybe it comes down to the kinds of titles that you like to play. I tend to be a more casual gamer. I'm not a hardcore gamer, although they do have some fun games like Oceanhorn, and now they have the new sports game, the new basketball game that we mentioned earlier. So I think Apple is expanding out its titles. I think there's also a new game that's getting a lot of buzz from the same guy who created Final Fantasy, and I think it's called Phantasian, something like that, and it looks beautiful. It looks gorgeous. Not my style of game, but if you're into that kind of game, might be another one to check out. So I'd love to hear additional recommendations. If you've been playing something on Apple Arcade and you're really, really enjoying it, share that with us, because I'd love to find new stuff. I've tried out a lot. These are just two titles that I've enjoyed most recently. Maybe I'll try to dig into the catalog and see what else I've played that I've really, really enjoyed. There's been a few titles for sure, and I'll try to share those on future episodes of the MacCast. But with that, that is going to do it for this episode. As I leave you, I'd like to take a moment to thank my show sponsor, Smile, makers of Text Expander and PDF Pen, both for Mac and iOS. You can check out their great software by visiting smilesoftware.com/podcast. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at cachefly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. You can find them at backbeatmedia.com. As always, I love hearing from you. If you have a comment, a question, something you'd like to hear covered on a future episode of the MacCast, you can send your emails and audio comments to maccast@gmail.com. You're also welcome to call in on the listener hotline. That phone number is 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9. You can leave a voicemail there. And if you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you'll find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And finally, if you'd like to follow me on social media, you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast. You can check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast and find me on Instagram, just MacCast on Instagram. But hey, that's going to do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.